When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Affected by Altitude, a Colorado Rockies podcast for and by Rockies fans on Rocky Mountain Rooftop. Thank you for joining us as we discuss all things baseball and Colorado Rockies. Hello and welcome to Affected by Altitude, the Colorado Rockies podcast on Rocky Mountain Rooftop, a proud affiliate of the Fans First Sports Network. I am your host, Evan Lang, and with me, as always, my partner in crime wearing his Burlington sock puppets hat is Skylar Timmons.
Yes, because I don't want to pay extra shipping that makes the cost of a Rockies new hat the exact price it would be listed for.
It's one of those. It's one of those things where if you're not close to a dugout store, or shipping is going to be expensive, it's just it's tough to get new stuff.
Yeah, I can get the hat, like put in a coupon. Oh, hat down to $33, and let's go to checkout, and oh, it's back up to $45. Like, what's the point of the coupon?
Yeah. I get a lot of my hats directly. I'm very lucky. I live by a dugout store. It's easier for me to get to games. I can just go and get them from the actual stadium or from the shops. Other people ain't so lucky.
Whereas I live in a high mountain valley desert. I live in a desert, Evan.
Looks like you're getting your just deserts for your choice in where you live.
Boo.
No, please continue. The booing. I revel in it. But today we're here to talk about, and the first main thing we're really going to talk about is the prospect rankings for the 2024 baseball season for your Colorado Rockies are officially finalized. So we have our top 30 prospect listing. If you follow us over at purplerow.com, you know that we completed our top 30 prospect rankings over there a little bit ago. But now the official ones from MLB Pipeline are up. And the Rockies farm system ended up being ranked, 21st? In all of baseball?
Yeah, so they over MLB.com, which I think is the more like official one that's more widely studied and like referenced to by a lot of publications that don't do it themselves because it's coming from MLB Pipeline itself. And so, yeah, I think in that whole ranking, they went with 21st, and I was trying to pull up the thing of it, but they really pointed to they're doing a lot more just trying to draft and develop. They're really position heavy, that we know, but there's still some hidden gems in there pitching wise, but it's just a matter of getting everything to finally click together. So I think MLB.com and Pipeline, they're onto the notion. Yeah. The Rockies are trying to do something different, trying to get a different variety of pitchers looking into. So I think Pipeline understands what the Rockies are trying to do. Jonathan Mayo and all those guys know what the Rockies are trying to do, which is always nice to hear because there's a lot of other publications I think we see when it's like, oh, I don't know what the Rockies are doing. So I think Pipeline has a little bit better idea.
Yeah, Pipeline is generally pretty solid towards the Rockies. Now, I do think that 21 is a little low.
I think so, too.
Considered, I do think the Rockies farm system is better than that. Are they a top 15 farm system? Probably not.
Yeah.
But are they a bottom 10 farm system? I don't think so.
I think like 17, like 18, yeah. 17, like just maybe a couple ticks up from 21 seems about right. And like that 17 to 20 range, somewhere in there, maybe just a couple ticks higher.
That's where I'd put them. Like, they're not knocking anybody's socks off, but I think there are better. And we've been saying this for a couple of years now, though. The Rockies farm system is better than a lot of people have on paper. And I think it's actually improving even, because one of our major complaints about the farm system has been that it's very bottom heavy.
Yeah.
A lot of the best prospects were all down in high A or low A with Fresno or Spokane. And now they're starting to get sort of disseminated into double A and triple A. But overall, I think the Rockies farm system is pretty solid. They even have four players in their top 100 prospect rankings, including a top 30 prospect in Adele Amador, who, to the surprise of no one, is listed as the Rockies' number one prospect in the organization per MLB Pipeline. And we're gonna take a little look at our prospect rankings here.
Yeah.
We're not going to go over the full list because just the amount of time it would take to talk in detail about every single guy in the top 30 is time we do not have. But really, just the main things that stand out to us here. The top four are not surprising because the top four are all guys that are in MLB's top 100. So behind Adele Amador is right-handed pitcher Chase Dollander, who, not surprising at all for him to be number two. The organization is extremely high on him.
The next DeGrom.
I that sure is a comparison that you could make, I suppose,
as long as the injuries don't come with it.
But Dollander is a guy who could be in the majors sooner rather than later. Rockies general manager Bill Schmidt has alluded to. Number three is Yankiel Fernandez, who's going to start the year in double A Hartford. He's already been optioned to that organization. And then number four is a guy who we will definitely talk about more a little bit later, but Jordan Beck, Mr. Mike Honcho, who is one of the few prospects who has not been optioned or reassigned to minor league camp yet, having a really strong spring training so far. So they're taking more of an extended look at him. But the rest of the list, there's some that make sense and some that doesn't. In terms of placement, I don't think there's anyone on this list where I'm going to go, no, that guy shouldn't be on the top 30.
Yeah.
But I think there's some guys that I think could still be on our top 30. Frankly, I'm a little bummed to see Aaron Shunk having dropped off of the top 30 listing.
Yeah.
But he's also now 26 years old, has been in the organization since 2019. So it's not surprising, but I do think he's still worth being on there. Our man Connor Venskoyuk, who we've talked about a lot on this show, is number 30, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too, with the trade that he comes over in and for Mike Moustakas, and all of a sudden we have a top 30 prospect, because I don't think he was ranked with the Angels last year, or from what I could understand from writing another article, I don't think he was ranked.
It's tough to see on MLB Pipeline, yeah, because if you go to last year's, they update it for the end of the season for 2023. So I'm just clicking around, but it doesn't appear that he was a ranked prospect in 2022.
I don't think he was for the Angels.
And that is a really cool move because it goes to show you, one, the Rockies like what they see in Connor Venskoyuk, as do we, but also that for that Mike Moustakas trade, like, we got us a genuine pitching prospect for it, which means that signing worked out really well.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, as much as a lot of people complained about or didn't like the move at the time, like, Mike Moustakas, a net positive at the end of the day.
Yeah, honestly, I really do think it was a net positive. Some other guys that I think is really cool to see on the list are multiple other guys that we brought in via trade. Both Jake Madden and Mason Albright are on the list. Mm-hmm. Other prospects that we got from the Angels. And I really like seeing Kyle Karros on the list. Kyle Karros ranked at number 29, who we drafted last year. You know, as you all know, the son of famed Rockies killer and longtime Los Angeles Dodger Eric Karros. We got to see a pretty cool thing with him where he got to deliver the lineup card with his dad during a spring training game. That was really cool. Anybody, you know, outside of the top 10 who you like seeing on there or you think is an interesting pick?
It's interesting, like, picking up Anthony Molina in the Rule 5 draft, and he slots in at number 27. Like, I thought that was interesting. Like, oh, yeah, he's been interesting to kind of keep an eye on this spring. and we'll get more into that bullpen stuff later, but it's cool to see him slide in there. Rule 5 pick. Oh, we got another top 30 prospect in there for us. The interesting trend, I think, that we can kind of talk a little bit about is it's a pretty even split here in our top 30, where the top half, like 1 through 13 or so, mostly offensive players, position players, and then 14 through the end of the list is pretty much all pitchers. It's like Chase Dolander is number 2, Kyle Karros number 29. Those are the odd men out in the halves of this list, which pretty interesting, and also goes to show, like, there's a lot more, I think, pitching talent in the organization than people realize, I think. And that's something I think the Rockies are figuring out, is there's a lot more pitching talent in those levels, and it's just a matter of if these guys can figure out how to get to the big leagues. Pretty bright little future there for some of the pitching. And even guys that are maybe just off the bubble that we'll talk about that are on the spring breakout roster. No, they're just outside of that top 30 that, no, they could easily be on that list.
What I'm a little bummed out to see is how some guys have sort of slotted down. But yeah, something to keep in mind is that several of these formerly higher-ranked pitching prospects are part of that big group that ended up needing Tommy John surgery last year. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Gabriel Hughes has slid down to 17. Also in the bottom half of the top 30, we have Jordy Vargas and Jackson Cox. All three of those guys are guys who unfortunately had to have Tommy John surgery last year. When they come back, either very late this season or next season, they'll definitely have a chance to work themselves back up on that prospect ranking. Mm-hmm. Gabriel Hughes is really sad to see him slide down that far, but I think the fact that he's still ranked is really important. But we do need to see how he comes back from a pretty difficult surgery.
Yeah.
But other guys that I really like seeing in that back half, Carson Palmquist, who had a really solid couple of outings this spring. Anthony Molina, like you said, Jaden Hill, and some guys who are really on the cusp of being on the big league roster, but then some other guys who are more scattered. I feel like it's more even this year of guys who are closer to MLB and guys who are newer into the organization versus, like I've said, that bottom heavy. But go ahead.
I was going to say, you look at that top 30 list, and there's a trend, too, of look how, like, the number of guys, how they are drafted, where they are drafted from, a lot of college guys. And I think the Rockies and maybe a lot more players across MLB is they're looking more to college, especially for pitchers, because it's really hard to develop a high school pitcher, hard to project what they're going to be like. Like, you can get some truly special players out of the high school draft, well, position players, pitchers maybe. But I think a lot of the Rockies and a lot of teams are, it's getting a lot more difficult to get those guys, and rather we'll wait for him to go into college. No, and unless he's like a Jackson Holiday who's been coached by his, who's been getting pretty much college instruction since he was a little baby.
Yeah.
professional coaching. But you can look at that list, but Zach Veen's down at number 6, drafted at a high school. There's Benny Montgomery, he's at 10, Drew Romo at number 9. So there's still talent you can get out of high school in that first round, some good talent. But it's the pitching is really coming out of college for the Rockies. Guys that are a little more refined, have had a little bit more coaching, refinement, know who they are as pitchers. And so it's easier to translate that and maybe get them to the big leagues quicker. That's just an interesting development here, because you look at the ETA on a bunch of these guys, it's 2024 on some, 2025, 2026. So these are guys that could be projected to show up over these next 3 seasons to show up at some point, which is pretty interesting to see and a little bit exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of the guys in our top 10 right now are guys who, in lining up with what the Rockies are saying is their next goal for sort of a contention window, are guys who are going to be here 2024, 2025, 2026. And I look at the top 10 and I'm pretty happy with everybody who's in the top 10.
Yeah.
So like we said, our top four are our top 100 prospect, Del Amador, Chase Dollander, Yunkiel Fernandez, and Jordan Beck. But then number five is Sterling Thompson, who has really impressed in his time with the organization. Number six is Zach Veen, who is back and healthy. You know, they're really looking for him to reestablish himself this year. Number seven is the young shortstop international signing, Dion Jorge, who is still an A-level ball, but he's also like 20 years old. So that's going to be an interesting prospect.
Highly regarded international prospect when they signed him. So,
yeah, there are two extremely high regarded, very young international prospects in the Rockies top 30, including, and I'll bounce out back to this one, Ashley Andahar, the guy who the Rockies signed this year in the international signing. He's 16 years old and already considered one of the organization's top prospects, which is going to be really interesting to see how he develops. But then number eight is Cole Kerrig, who again was very impressive last year in his first year with the organization. Number nine is Drew Romo. And then number 10 is Benny Montgomery, who, you know, we're still pretty high on here at Affected by Altitude. I really like the top 10 overall. And it's pretty in line with, if you look at the Perps rankings over at Purple Row that came out earlier this year, the top 10's pretty in line. There are a couple small differences, but overall the top 10s are, the players are there, they're the same players, but some of them are just in different spots, which I think goes to show that people also have a pretty good understanding of their own farm system as well here in the Colorado Rockies fandom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good list. A lot to be excited about. I think the future is bright. And it's good to see what's coming.
And like we've said before, if there is any time to start watching Rockies baseball, minor league baseball, mm-hmm. This year's a pretty good year.
Yeah, no, that's still a wonderful deal. Just have to get MLB TV and even just the audio subscription, just the radio description, and you get access to watch the minor league teams. All the minor league teams, so it's pretty sweet. And yeah, this is the year to do so.
And speaking of things that are going to be broadcast on television, with a magnificent segue, now that we've sort of just very quickly gone over the top prospects in the organization, the next thing to talk about really is the spring breakout game, which is coming up pretty soon. The spring breakout game, new for this year, where teams are fielding rosters of their top prospects against the top prospects of other organizations in Major League Baseball. And all of the rosters have been named for this spring breakout game, including the Rockies. And there's some really interesting names on here. Some guys that are in the top 30, some guys that are not. And probably the one that stands out the most to me, just to get us started, is right-handed reliever Zach Agnos, drafted in 2022 out of East Carolina. He played with the Fresno Grizzlies last year and had a really, really impressive season. Was one of the best closers in the California League and a very good minor league closer in general. Really cool to see him be named on this list. And then there's a lot of other guys who are pretty recently drafted as well, combined with guys who are also, you know, prospects that have been here a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I think Agnos is, like we said, there's a lot of those guys, especially relievers, not a lot of relievers that ended up on that top 30 list. And so it's good to see a guy like Zach Agnos, who had an incredible year last year, who's now fully committed to that transition, fully as a reliever, and put up some incredible numbers last year. I think it was like a .198 batting average against him last year in Fresno. Really stood out. And so it's good to see him get that recognition and get a chance to show it on a bigger stage, to the nation, if people tune in. Or what I love about the spring breakout, and for a lot of these guys, it gives fans their whole intent. get these prospects out in front of the fans, really, to introduce themselves to the fans of the teams. Because, hey, like, who do you think is going to be the starting pitcher for the Rockies that night? I'm pretty sure, I have a good feeling that it could be number two prospect, number 52 overall, Chase Dolander, to make his introduction to the Rockies, kind of like Gabriel Hughes last year in spring training. No, a chance for your number one, your first round pick that year, and you get to see him on the mound finally. Like, it's exciting. I'm excited to see him pitch.
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm really looking forward to that. I think the spring breakout game is going to be something really special. And I think, honestly, I wish they had done something like this sooner, because this is a really cool way to get people more invested in their farm systems and keep an eye on these prospects and the next generation of the game. And there are some cool names on here. Angel Chavi, who is one of our Rule 5 protections. Isaiah Coupe, who's been sort of a more under the radar prospect, but really good. Dolander, a bunch of guys from last year. Sean Sullivan, Cade Denton, both will be on this roster. And then for the position players, there are a lot of already established names, which is pretty cool. I like that a lot of the pitchers are a mix of guys, both established and unestablished in the organization. But the position players are all the guys who you are expecting to see. So like Adel Amador, Hunter Goodman, Ryan Ritter, Sterling Thompson, Yankiel Fernandez, Cole Carrig, Zach Veen. Overall, I think it's a pretty solid roster. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I think this thing we talk about is like that infield. It's kind of a little easier to figure out. Okay, this is what the Rockies infield's going to look like for several years. You know, whatever they do at third base, but up the middle, Tovar and we assume Amador at second base, and then the corners are still kind of in fluctuation of what they could be, depending on what happens with other players. But it's that outfield that it's going to continue to be our conversation for years of what the heck are we doing in the outfield, but it's a good problem to have. And we'll talk about some of these guys later on. Yeah. So many interesting names, and it'll be fun to see them in action in a big stage. And then tune in throughout the season in the minors. Oh, I want to watch Cole Carrig hit. Okay. I'm going to go watch the Spokane game type of thing. So it's going to be fun. I look forward to it.
Make sure that you tune in to the spring breakout game. It's going to be March 16th against the Arizona Diamondbacks prospect roster. It will be broadcast on Rockies TV as well as on MLB Network. So make sure you tune in and give it a watch.
Let's hope they agree to play 9. I think at the moment it's just 7, unless they agree to change it.
Yeah, we'll see. But we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, it's time to talk more spring training. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Yay!
Thank you so much for sticking with us through that ad break. And welcome back to Affected by Altitude with Evan and Skyler. And Skyler, we are now officially, a couple of weeks into spring training. We've gone through the first couple roster cutdowns. And it's time to take a look at how the team is doing through spring training so far. And I figured we would sort of split this up into sections. So for this first part, we're going to be mostly talking about the position players in the organization, how they're doing this spring. And then in the second half, we're probably going to talk about the pitching. So we might as well just dive right into it, honestly. The two guys in this organization who are probably in the most competition for a roster spot, Alaris Montero and Michael Tolia, are both having very interesting spring trainings. Michael Tolia here in spring training is hitting 269, 333, 692 with 3 home runs and 2 doubles, 2 walks and 7 strikeouts. And Montero's the guy who he wants to, if not just be a bench player, he wants to try and be the starting first baseman or a regular for the designated hitter. And then on the other hand, you've got Michael Tolia, and Tolia is also having a pretty solid spring where he's hitting 308, 400, 615, 2 home runs, 10 strikeouts, 4 walks, 2 doubles. And Tolia, in addition to competing for that first base spot and occasional DH, is also competing for the right field spot, which is a position that he can play and is still kind of open as the Rockies figure out what they're doing between right field, first base, and DH. And Skyler, I want to get your opinion on, you know, how you think this battle is going, not necessarily between the two of them, because I think there is a possibility that both could make the final roster, but how both of these guys are doing so far in terms of trying to earn these spots on the opening day 26.
Yeah, it's a tough one where they're in different spots because Montero out of options, he has to make the team. Otherwise get risk putting on waivers. And it's a thing we have of the Rockies can't find a place for Montero. And I'm sorry, Rockies,
don't put Chris Bryant in right field.
Stop it. Stop it. Get some help. Like, I will put up a season of Charlie Blackmon in right field before you put Bryant out there. Which, hey, put Bryant, if I have to do that, Charlie Blackmon in right field, like 3 days out of the week, 4 days out of the week, I will suffer through that if it means Montero can DH and Bryant gets to play first or vice versa there. But that's the hard thing, is it's cool that Montero's doing great and he could do some damage, but I still have a hard time seeing the Rockies finding a place for him to play. And hey, him doing good in spring, raising that trade stock, wonderful. Maybe near the end of spring training, hey, we got this juicy deal and we'll take Montero and give you these pitchers that are this bullpen pitcher, this pitcher that are this rotation guy or something. That's not looking too bad there, Evan. But it's awesome to see him make those adjustments and do some things. It's just hard to see where he plays. Whereas Tolia, on the other hand, like you said, he has that right field capability, which is a spot that's open. You could put him out there. Because I don't really like subscribing to, we got to shuffle guys in a bunch. No, I like guys being established and have extended playing time that are worthy of that. You know, Nolan Jones, if he doesn't get his playing time like he did last year, we're probably not having the conversations about Nolan Jones that we are still. So it's cool to see them doing good. I'm so glad that they've made some adjustments and are battle making it an actual battle. It's just so hard to figure out how it could pan out, you know? It's so hard to predict because we just don't know what the Rockies can do.
Yeah, it's really frustrating with Montero, a guy who is very clearly putting in the work. He wants this roster spot. Everybody at camp has been talking about how hard he's worked in the offseason, how hard he's working at camp, and he's just so limited in where you can play him. He's first base and he's DH. The organization made it pretty clear that they don't intend to put him back at third base anytime soon. And it really does. It makes it hard for him versus, like you said, Tolia has got more of that flexibility and he's still got the minor league options. Yeah. But for Monzi, I really hope he makes it because he's put in the work. He's made the adjustments. He's hitting well. And I want to see him succeed, especially with, you know, everything he went through last year and the last couple of years, the constant ups and downs from the big league roster to the minor league roster. You know, we talked about before how when he was slumping hard last year that he opened up with a team where, you know, he's such a big guy in the clubhouse where his teammates really do, you know, care for him. And so I want to see him. If it's not with, We've said this so many times now, if it's not going to be with the Rockies, I want to see him end up someplace where he's going to get a chance to be an everyday starter and an everyday contributor. He's earned it. He's got nothing left to prove on the minor league level, and he's showing this spring that he can hang tough on a big league roster.
Yeah, and it's even one of those things where, like, I wish Charlie Blackmon wasn't good at hitting lefties because, oh, easy platoon. But the thing is, Charlie Blackmon's good against lefties. Now, Ryan McMahon's not very good against lefties, but he plays third base, and the Rockies don't want Montero over there type of thing. So it makes his versatility so difficult. Just like, where can I stick him so he can play? I got $182 million at first base. they won't commit to it. They keep floating that idea. But Bryant's going to be at first base more often than not, I think.
Yeah.
No, 6 days out of the week, 5 games out of the week, he's at first base. And when he's not doing that, you stick him in at DH. Do not put him in the outfield, dang it.
And that's what's so frustrating is, once again, the Rockies are just in an absolute logjam at so many positions. It's completely of their own making.
Mm-hmm.
And they hang on to prospects for way too long, or they don't give their prospects the fair shake that they really need. And it's definitely a bummer because, like, both him and Tolia, like, Tolia will still probably have some difficulty getting regular playing time, considering that, you know, you'll have, unless he gets the starting right field position.
Yeah.
He's going to be competing with Montero and Bryant for reps at first base, as well as reps in right field. Mm-hmm. The other guys who we're taking a look at are guys where definitely they're things that we wanted to see out of them. How about Brenton Doyle?
Yeah.
Brenton Doyle was a Gold Glove center fielder last year. One of the best center fielder in the league defensively, but his bat was like, oh, there's promise, but sometimes it's a little bit tough to watch. Well, Brenton Doyle has come out swinging here this spring training. The power's not quite there yet with the adjustments he's made. He doesn't have any home runs or even extra base hits,
but that's okay
so far this spring. But he is 9 for 24, which is really good, and he's only struck out 4 times and he's drawn 3 walks. A slap hitting contact singles hitting speedster at the top of the bottom of the lineup, that'll play on any team anytime.
And only has 2 stolen bases, so he hasn't run as much, I think, this spring as maybe he'd want to. But when he does get on base, you've seen him try to be more aggressive, take more bags. And so that can compensate. Oh, doesn't have any extra base hits this spring. Oh, well, he'll just get on first and steal second base. Boom, extra base hit type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, a single plus a stolen base is just as good as a double.
Exactly. And I think the key that you pointed out there, Evan, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks. So, one, he's making contact, Evan. That was the big problem because, his speed's negated. Because he can't hit the ball.
Yeah. If you're not on base, your speed doesn't do anything.
And that's why we saw at the end of last season when he was making adjustments and finally was getting more comfortable, he had that really good September, last couple weeks of the season. And I think he made a couple more adjustments, just try to simplify some things more in the offseason. And he looks good at the plate and he's making contact, which is the big thing. A little dribbler up the middle, hey, that works because he's got speed. Speed kills. And I think speed's going to play a huge factor for his game this season, because if he can put that ball in play, just put it in play, that's going to make fielders' lives a living hell of him trying to get him out at first.
It's something, I know they're not necessarily as comparable, but it's something that was a huge part of Garrett Hampson's game, is that elite speed. Doyle's got that elite speed where even if you're not necessarily driving the ball with authority, if you make contact, you put it in play, a bunt, a slap hit, a bouncer, a dribbler, you can leg out that infield hit. And with Doyle, I think it's going to be really interesting to see where they slot him in the lineup, because he could be an excellent prototypical leadoff hitter. Mm-hmm. But you could also slot him very low down the lineup, like your number 8 or number 9 spot, of he can get on base to set the table when the lineup flips over.
Exactly.
I'm really looking forward to watching Brenton Doyle this season. He looks confident. He looks good. He put back on all the weight that he lost running around in center field last year. He lost 25 pounds last year.
Dude, I need to get on that exercise program. I'll go play center field at Coors if it means that, if I can lose 50 pounds.
Can we get a special Rockies writer workout program where we go and we run around in center field with Brenton Doyle?
I would gladly chase down fly balls. That's my kind of exercise, Evan. I'll go run bases.
Sounds like a blast to me.
Yeah.
Other guys, definitely worth taking a look at. Nolan Jones had a very slow start to spring training. He was striking out a lot very early on, which was sort of his MO in spring training last year. He is one of the team leaders in strikeouts with 10 compared to just one walk, which is not great. But he's really started to put it together recently, where now he's 6 for 26. He's got 2 doubles and an RBI, no stolen bases yet. But something else to keep an eye on is that he's had some back tightness throughout this spring, that he was removed from a game when his back sort of seized up on him. He missed a couple games, and at time of recording today's game, he was in the DH spot to spot the game instead of out in the outfield. So something to keep an eye on. I'm not too worried about Nolan Jones, especially because we're seeing him sort of pick things up and put it together here in the spring. And at the end of the day, for guys who are established as already having roster spots, spring training is sort of less of a big deal than your guys who are on the cusp or fighting for a roster spot. Which brings me to our next topic, is one Mr. Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah. And before we do that, one thing I want to touch on with Nolan Jones, I think the big thing for him this season will be continue to improve on the strikeouts and increase the walks. And he did it during the regular season, but he needs to start picking it up here a little bit here in these next couple weeks of spring training. 10 strikeouts to one walk. You know, need to bump that up just a little bit better. Get some more walks in there. A healthy dose, healthy mix.
You compare him to Tolia, who is tied for the most strikeouts on the team with 10. Tolia has 4 walks.
Yeah.
And the 2 home runs. And Tolia, we know that his MO that he has no intention of changing is his hyper-aggressive plate approach.
He's going for 3 true outcomes.
Yeah. He wants to, I think in his specific words, he wants to punish a ball. Which,
there you go.
He can do. And I think that's the thing, is you're absolutely right. Is Nojo needs to take more walks, needs to cut down on strikeouts and be making more contact.
Yeah.
And if he can do that, then he's going to have another really special season.
Yeah. Anyways, back to Chuck.
Back to Chuck Nasty, because on the comments over at Purple Row, on Twitter, on a bunch of different places, I am seeing people going, well, I'm pretty worried about Chuck. His bat looks slow. He's not doing that well. And this is something that I need to talk about. And it's one of the reasons why I said this when we're talking about Nolan Jones, is these guys who are established, who are not having to fight for a roster spot, they really don't need to go all out in spring training. And for Charlie Blackmon especially, this has been his MO for the last, like, 10 years. Chuck is always a slow starter in the spring as he follows his routine. He gets his bat speed warmed up. People are like, oh, his bat speed looks really slow. It's like, it always does to start the spring because he's working on his timing and getting his bat speed back. So for the people who are worried about Charlie Blackmon, I think it's really unnecessary to be worried about him here in spring training, because he's doing what he always does in spring training. And if you look, you know, since 2018 through this year, he has a batting average over 300 in spring training just once. He has a batting average under 200 like 3 or 4 times, where from 2019 to 2021, he had 174, 156, and 163 in spring training. And right now, the way he's hitting is pretty in line with how he hit in spring training last year. And he had a pretty solid season last year in the big leagues, where he's got 2 walks, he has 4 strikeouts, he has 4 base hits. Doesn't have any extra base hits right now, no home runs, but he really doesn't need to belt out the home runs in spring training. And I think it's very silly, and I'm not trying to, you know, denigrate any of the listeners, any of the readers, but I think it's very silly right now to be worried about Chuck when he is doing the same thing he has done every spring training. He is just getting himself warmed up for the regular season, which is what matters to him.
Yeah, like just getting a lot of those veterans. They're just getting back into their routines, just feeling comfortable in the box. And you hear that. Chris Bryant, same thing. He's like, no, I'm feeling good in the box. And that's the goal of spring training for those types of guys. Is okay, I'm coming in. Okay, how's my bat speed feel? How am I feeling in the box? I'm feeling sluggish. I'm not seeing the ball well. I need to go work on something. So that's, they actually get to live up. They get to treat it like the name implies, training. And hey, I watched Chuck, it was a week or so ago. It was like in the first inning, ball down around his knees and he golfs one. And I thought it was gone and it ended up being like curving and ended up being a foul ball. So like he's been making some solid contact in places.
Yeah.
And same thing as always is impeccable plate discipline. What was that? 4 strikeouts to 2 walks. So Chuck's just getting into the rhythm of it. Yeah. Now, if we're saying having this kind of conversation in like end of May.
Yeah. Then there's a problem.
Then we're like, yeah, I'm worried about Chuck.
But it's something to keep in mind with Chuck is that it's never been like, I don't think there's going to be as a huge drop off in his bat speed. And even if there is a change in his bat speed for the kind of hitter that he is, that is less of a problem because he is good at putting the bat where it needs to be because he has that such good plate discipline and such a good approach. Yeah. Now compare that to say Carlos Gonzalez, when he had that huge drop off because Cargo didn't really have the plate discipline. It was that he had such quick, sharp bat speed that he could grab a slider out of the zone and demolish it. And then he just couldn't do that anymore because his bat couldn't keep up. That's not the same thing that's going on here. So yeah, don't be worried about Charlie Blackmon unless we're still having this conversation in late May, like Skyler said.
Yeah.
Just keep letting him do his thing. I think it's going to be a fine season for him.
He's been doing this for having spring trainings for like 14 years. 14 years. I think he's going to be okay.
Yeah. I think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he knows his body better than you or I ever will.
He knows his body better than I know my body. So, yeah. The sort of last thing I want to talk about, and we'll do this really quick before we hit our next ad break, is just sort of how the bench player stuff is going. A couple players who are really fighting for these bench spots here in spring training. In the outfield, it's the competition between Bradley Zimmer and Sam Hilliard. And in the infield, it's who is really gunning for that utility spot between Julio Carreras, Alan Trejo, and the surprise emergence as a real competitor for that utility spot, Aaron Shunk. And if you are listening to this on Monday, you've already read my article about Aaron Shunk turning his audition in for the utility spot. He started playing shortstop. I was legitimately surprised by this because I posted on Twitter last week. I was like, Aaron Shunk, you know, the Rockies really should genuinely be considering him for the utility spot with what a great season he's having or spring training he's having right now. And a bunch of people responded to me. It's like, Aaron Shunk is great, but he can't play shortstop. And then I tuned into the game yesterday. And who do I see playing shortstop for just the second time ever in his entire career, college or professional, is Aaron Shunk.
And to which Bud Black says, we're trying to broaden his horizons. I wonder why.
Is it because Aaron Shunk is having a pretty solid spring where he is 7 of 18 with 5 RBI and 2 stolen bases, who can play perfectly cromulent defense now at every infield position? He even made yesterday against the Chicago Cubs. This was the Saturday afternoon game. He laid out. This is when I noticed he was at shortstop because I had just gotten to where I was going. We turn on the game and I see Aaron Shunk lay out to stop a ball from going into the outfield. And it still ended up being a base hit because the guy who had hit it was pretty speedy. But I'm like, man, that was a nice catch. And then I went, wait a second. That was Aaron Shunk at shortstop. And so he's this spring training, he's made 2 appearances at shortstop. The first time he's played short in his career. And like you said, Bud Black states we're trying to broaden his horizons. I think he really does have a shot to be that utility guy. Yeah. And on the other hand, it's I think the odd man out for this battle is going to end up being Julio Carreras. He's not having as great a spring. He's shown some flashes. He has. He's coming off an excellent winter where he was playing in the Dominican Winter League, and he's definitely shown some promise. But right now he does have a home run, but he's hitting just 4 for 23, 4 RBI and a stolen base, on base percentage of just 240. I just don't think he's ready yet. And that's not an indictment on Julio Carreras or anything like that. He's only 24 years old. He only just got to AAA Albuquerque last year.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's his time, and I think he'll have his chance. But I think this infield position battle is going to boil down to Alan Trejo versus Aaron Shunk. Two guys who I really like, both of these guys, but it's tough to say. But if I'm being honest, I kind of think that Aaron Shunk might have the leg up.
Yeah, I'm ready for some Shunky Monkey ice cream. It's a tough one. I think it's going to be closer than we think because, you know, Trejo has the familiarity. You know, they just kind of dropped him off the roster because they just need to make some room, knowing that, oh yeah, he'll probably get a spot back in the spring. And so I think Trejo, just from having experience at the big league level, has kind of that veteranosity that Bud Black likes. I think he has the edge. Yeah, Aaron Shunk, and I wrote about this last year too, of like when they're calling Coco Montez and trying to figure out what to do at second base, because Harold Castro, like, we don't want him there every day. dude's ready, like, to take on the show. And he's another, there's just some guys that I see when they play, I'm like, that guy can be good whether he's starting or not.
This guy
He's a bench guy. He can fit that perfect mold. Sean Bouchard fits in that same camp for me, of a dude that can come off the bench and be an impact guy. Sometimes Trejo, he's that backup defensive infielder, but a lot of the time when I think, oh, he's coming in off the bench late in the game, let's hope for the best. So it's going to come down. I think it's going to be a close one between those two.
I do, especially because Allen is having a pretty good spring himself.
Yeah, he's doing good.
7 for 21. He's got a home run, 5 RBI. His on-base percentage is looking pretty solid at 375. Like, Trejo is doing his thing. And you know me, I love Alan Trejo. I tend to get very attached to our utility guys here at the Colorado Rockies baseball organization. And Alan Trejo is no exception. I love Alan Trejo. I loved Garrett Hampson. I loved Terry Shumpert back in the day. And for Alan, I think he definitely does have the leg up in terms of, you know, because the team knows him very well. Honestly, in an ideal scenario, you would have both of these guys on the big league roster. But I just don't see that happening right now, because we also need a guy who can play backup outfield, and that's going to be Zimmer or Hilliard. Yeah. Unless, you know, one of these guys adds outfield to their game. But
you never know. Trejo,
it's not impossible. And they both have pretty solid speed and range, but neither Alan Trejo nor Aaron Shunk has much of a history, if at all, of playing any outfield whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's tough, but it's definitely going to boil down to those two. We have the finalists for the two bench positions.
Yeah, and that's the nice thing to say, is that it's not really the wrong choice to go with either of them.
Yes.
Between those two. And honestly, it's the same with Zimmer and Hilliard. Like, you're in the same place with either one, really. No, so we have four players in those two positions that are basically players that are basically the same in a way, and just how they're performing and their production, the makeup and stuff, pretty close between those two. In those four players, the two battle spots are pretty close comparisons of who it is. So it's like, do you want it, the Volkswagen Beetle in blue or yellow? Like, same exact things. There's different flavors.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said about Montero earlier, is you know what not a terrible scenario is that maybe you deal one of these guys towards the end of spring training, where they're all turning in pretty sharp additions. And it's tough because Zimmer's on a minor league contract. He's not a prospect. You know, it was a non-roster invite. But he's turning in a good enough spring where if a team really needs like a backup outfielder, someone might come a knocking. And that wouldn't be the worst thing. Same for either Aaron Shrunk or Alan Trejo. And, you know, I'd be sad to see either of them go. But both of them are turning in such good springs that you could keep an ear to the ground of people who might come a knocking for infielders.
Yeah. Could be.
All righty. Well, that segment ran a little bit long, but we're going to take another quick break, and we come back. It's time for the pitching side of things, so don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back after these messages. After these messages, we'll be right back.
Much of antacids.
This episode of Affected by Altitude is brought to you by whatever brand of antacid Skyler has.
Antacids, non-generic brand.
They'll get you through the Rockies season.
Welcome back here to Affected by Altitude.
I'm Evan. With me is Skyler, as always. And in this final segment, we're going to keep running through how the Rockies are doing this spring training. And now it's really time to take a look at the pitching staff. And the first thing we're going to look at is how the rotational battles are going so far. And like we've said repeatedly, the top three for the rotation is locked in at this point. It's going to be Kyle Freeland, Austin Gomber, and Cal Quantrill. And we'll talk a little about how they've done. Kyle Freeland has looked fantastic in both of his starts so far.
It's going to be a rebound year, my friends.
I'm really excited to watch him. We talked at length about Kyle last year, so we'll keep this pretty short. He's still hitting 93. He even hit 94 a couple times on that fastball. His breaking pitches look good. I'm excited. Be excited for Kyle Freeland. On the other hand, Austin Gomber's had a little bit of shakiness so far this spring, and it's really tough to evaluate pitchers sometimes because they're often working on things that we don't necessarily know about. So take all of this with a grain of salt, is that so far this spring, Austin's given up 11 hits.
And most of those were against that one start against the Dodgers, who are always aggressive first pitch against the Rockies.
Against the Dodgers, who are the Dodgers?
Yeah, like the Dodgers do that to every Rockies pitcher. Fastball over the plate, bonk, bonk. Oh, we've scored three runs on four hits, all of them singles.
Versus in his second start against the Angels, a more, you know, appropriately calibrated team that the Rockies would be able to be more competitive against, Gomber had a really pretty solid start in three innings. He gave up just three hits, didn't allow any earned runs, walked just one batter and struck out three. That'll play.
And the big thing for Gomber is being able to bend that back enough, whatever, to not leave the ball up. That's what happens to him a lot, is he leaves a fastball or a curveball over the very top part of the plate, and it just gets smacked even though it's just a weak bloop. But if he can just work north, south, east, west better, if he can command his pitches better and maybe spot a little better around the zone, that'll help. But when he hangs stuff, it's
and in that's for what a bad happened outing. In that Dodgers game a lot.
Yeah.
Where he was, a lot of those breaking pitches, a lot of those fastballs were staying high.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know Austin has had the back issues over the last couple of years. So that's just something he's going to need to work on. Where, you know, for Austin, it's really going to be, I need to see what his next couple starts look like to make a true evaluation for him.
Yeah.
Especially because he could be working on stuff that we don't know about. That's what makes things so complicated in spring training.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have Cal Quantrill, who is even harder to evaluate because his second start of the spring got scratched due to weather.
In his first one though.
Yeah, he pitched two innings in his first start. His first inning was a little bumpy, and then in the second inning he really cleaned it up. So his first inning, the other day, it was against the Reds, I believe, he gave up a lot of loud contact, but only ended up giving up one earned run, which was a home run. And, you know, Cal is more of a fly ball pitcher who can give up loud contact. But in his second inning of work, he did totally fine. So that's, he's another guy where we need to wait and see. Now, where things really boil down to with the pitching, Skyler, is the last two spots in this rotation.
Woo! I'm sick of all these two-man battles. Two-spot battles.
I know everything is two people. But we need to talk a little bit about Dakota Hudson, who the Rockies signed to a one-year, $1.5 million contract this offseason. If I am being blunt, having looked at his body of work so far, I would not have Dakota Hudson on the opening day roster.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, in 5 1/3 innings, has given up 6 hits, 5 runs, 4 earned. But the big thing for him is that he has given up 6 walks to 5 strikeouts. The strikeouts are good. He's got basically a strikeout per inning, but he's got over a walk per inning, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, in his first couple appearances, his velocity was low, and we knew coming in that he was a low velocity guy, but it was like very low 90s, and we've seen him put a couple ticks on it in his last start, but I am not sold on Hudson right now.
And again, like we said, there could be things he's working on, because he's had some rough past couple of years after coming back from Tommy John and, you know, not finding success last year, trying to maybe try new things this year, and it's just not working out. And or he just can't find his command. I think that's the big thing. But hey, because hey, a soft toss and ground baller, we know that can work at Coors Field, work for the Rockies to a degree. But yeah, he's got to find the zone.
Yeah.
I think if he's finding the zone a little bit better, maybe he's having a little bit more success. But an increase in walks, yeah, he has no command of his pitches right now. And that's a problem when you're a guy who needs to be pitching to contact and getting ground balls. That's what the Rockies want from him. Instead, he's getting 2 outs, and then, oh, I've single, walk, I've loaded the bases. And he's escaped a couple of times, which, hey, that's good. But then the other day, well, 5 runs in the inning in total from that were scored against just him and the Rockies in general. So he's got to clean some stuff up still. And now I think it was Luke Zalman from the Gazette or wherever, but watching him, like, he's flirting with a lot of disaster, and he's just not cutting it on the two pitches that he's using, and just not fooling anybody. And he compared it to Kyle Freeland, who was carving up dudes with just two pitches, really, fastballs, change up type of thing, and carving up dudes. Dakota Hudson doing the same thing, low velocity, two pitches, not fooling anybody. So it's either he's just got to learn how to get more deceptive. But the big thing, I think, for me, and I think the Rockies in general, stop walking, guys. Find the zone. It's right there. There's a little rectangle. They show it on TV all the time.
The Subaru strike zone.
Yeah, they need to imprint the Subaru strike zone into their heart.
And what I will say for walks is that they've actually not been as bad this spring as one could have expected. They're not great, but most of the team's walks are coming from a pretty short list of people who are not going to make the final roster. John Curtis has 4 walks, and we've talked about him a little bit. I don't think he's going to end up making the cut. Juan Mejia is a guy who's, you know, he's definitely not going to make the power. He's still so young, and he needs more seasoning in the minors. 4 walks. Kyle Wilcox, who's already been optioned, 4 walks. Jeff Criswell, who's already been optioned, 3 walks.
Chance Adams has been sent down. Mm-hmm. He probably doesn't have any walks, but
Chance Adams had 1. But Dakota Hudson leads the pack with 6 right now. And his 5 strikeouts will play, but that's just, it's not going to work. You're walking at least a guy per inning. And
yeah, it's the efficiency thing, because it's like, oh, he's gone 4 innings, he's already at 80 pitches. Like, no, that ain't going to fly, homie. Like, we need you to, you got to get through 5. That's the goal. Yeah. Get through 5.
Like, that's one of the reasons that he was signed, is that he's a guy who can come in and he's going to going to eat up some innings. That's why you're here. And another guy who's walking a decent amount of guys right now is Ryan Feltner. Ryan Feltner, another one of these guys who's in the running for one of those last two rotation spots. Feltner has had ups and downs this spring, which is to be expected. He's working on stuff. He's coming back from a pretty traumatic injury. He really only pitched after coming back twice last season. And in one of them, he was pulled early because his pitching arm was bothering him. And Feltner's been tough to evaluate because very few of his games have been on TV. So you can't really watch what he is doing. And he's flirted with some danger where he's, you know, either had a, so he's made three starts now as of today. His first game against the Kansas City Royals back in February, two innings, gave up one hit, walked a guy, struck out a guy. Pretty solid for your first time out. But then last week against the Giants, he had a tough time where he only went for one inning, didn't give up any home runs, but five hits, five earned runs, and two walks, just one strikeout. But then he came back today, or Sunday, March 10th, rather, and had another pretty solid outing. Had a bit of a rough first inning where basically a guy got on base and then they were able to get him around and score him without him giving up any further hits. But he gave up one hit, one earned run, one walk, but struck out three. So he's another guy where I'm actually not super worried about Felty right now. I think of all the guys who are probably working on stuff this spring, he is definitely one of them. We've, you know, we've heard conversations about the kinds of things he's working on, his velocity, his pitch placement, his pitch shape, him just coming back from that, you know, traumatic injury last year. So I'm not super worried. And then
when he's developing himself in fully embracing becoming a power pitcher. And so it's going to be expected. He's just getting control of that velocity with everything to get it consistently and find the zone. He's one of those guys. Okay. He's working on something.
I would definitely say that right now, Ryan Feltner, I think, will have one of these opening day spots on in the rotation. I think it would be silly not to.
Go ahead.
No, that's really all I have to say about Ryan, and I was going to move on to our next guy. So if you have other stuff to say about Felty,
I don't have it against on Feltner. I had another guy because you're going to move on to Peter Lambert.
I am going to move
on. We can do that real quick because then I have a dark horse that I want to touch on super quick.
I would actually like to hear about your dark horse.
No, let's do Peter Lambert first. It'll be more effective.
You're killing me, Smalls. All righty. So Peter Lambert is another guy who is gunning for this final rotation spot. Lambert has had so many ups and downs in his professional career with all the injuries. He's really been through the meat grinder. And he finally, last year, was pretty healthy. He made 25 appearances. ERA wasn't great at 5.36, but he did. And I think what really mattered is that he pitched like 87 innings. It showed that his arm is healthy, that he's healthy, and he's ready to pitch and start taking on a big league workload. So that was the big thing. Rather than the results last year, the big thing was, can you pitch regularly and be healthy? And now that we know that he can be gunning for that spot. And he's honestly, in my opinion, having a pretty good spring so far. He's both started and come out of the bullpen, which is to be expected. But in four appearances, he's got nine innings under his belt. He has given up five hits, but only two earned runs. He has struck out five batters and walked three. That's not bad. It's, it's, you know, there's still stuff that needs to be done. I would love to see the walks go even lower, but that's a pretty solid stat line for your first four games in spring training.
Yeah, and I think the big thing for him, especially if impression, is that he can come in, not walk guys, because he struggled with walks in the past. I remember the Albuquerque game I went and covered last year. He started it. There was a lot of walks from him in like three innings or so. So it's, can he continue to be healthy? Because I think he ended his season with like some bicep tendonitis type stuff. So, but it's hopefully we can see, but you know, it's good signs if he can. He's that kind of guy that can be your fifth starter. Okay, like, we're not expecting big things out of him, But can you just be competitive and give us five or so innings and keep us in the game, keep it close?
And we were talking about that a little bit before the show started, where the Rockies need to, sometimes it feels like they're really fighting to have Lambert be that guy that he was going to be before all the injuries, which is one of their top pitching prospects. They've got to let that go.
Yeah.
But he can be a solid back end starter. He can come out of the bullpen as we saw him do last year. So interesting to keep an eye on. If I had to choose right now, my opening day rotation, if you're going with a five-man rotation, is Freeland, Gomber, Quantrill, Feltner, Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
But Skyler says that he has a dark horse candidate.
Well, this guy started quite a few games the last 2 months of the season and came back as a non-roster invitee. The little cat, Mr. Ty Block. Because he hasn't started any games. He's mostly been coming out of the in bullpen work or like the second guy to come in. But seven innings, a 3.86 ERA. He's given up three runs on seven hits, one home run. Here's a big one for him. Seven strikeouts, zero walks. And, you know, I don't know if the Rockies would want to have three lefties in that rotation again. But it seems like old Mr. Ty Block, for the third year in a row, may pitch his way onto the Rockies opening day roster again. It's the equivalent of that Simpsons meme of Mo throwing Barney out of the bar and Barney shows up behind him. Like, that's what Ty Block's doing.
Would that be so bad at this point? Like, with the injuries that we've dealt with, where Lucas Gilbreth isn't ready to come back, Daniel Bard is going to miss some time. There's some of these other guys that we're not sold on. Would it be so bad to have a guy on the opening day 26 who can start when you need him to and also come out of the bullpen if you need him to?
Yeah. And like, you know, if I don't know if they're going to carry all those starters, but like put him up against Dakota Hudson, who they kind of fit the same mold, soft tossing ground ball type of guys. Ty Block works quick and he is efficient. The dude throws strikes. It may be a 89 mile an hour fastball, but it's usually a strike. And he's another one of those guys he won't walk many. He's going to throw it in the zone. So I don't think he makes that rotation, but I think he's a dark horse candidate out of these three guys we've talked about. I think he's like just peeking around that corner, like, you guys need me again? I'm ready to go.
And since he's come to the Rockies, honestly, walks have not really been a problem with Ty.
No.
Last year, he made 20 appearances and he had 24 walks, which is not amazing, but those 24 walks were spread out over 78 total innings compared to his 50 strikeouts. But like you said, Ty Block is another one of your soft tossing guys, but he isn't exhibiting the same problem that Dakota Hudson is, where he's not getting them where they need to be. He's painting the zone. He's always been very good at locating his pitches.
Yeah. He gets hit a lot and gives up runs. But when he's on, he can cruise through like five, six innings.
But you know who else gives up a lot of hits? And we rarely worry about him? Antonio Sensatella.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I worry about him.
Well, I mean, I worry about him because he's coming back from Tommy John. But I very rarely would sit down and be like, oh, Sensi's pitching. I don't know how today's going to go. Because Sensi's a very specific one.
The dude had two pitches. I'm like, oh, here comes three fastballs. But
I love Antonio Sensatella, and I will not take this kind of slander against my dear Sensi. How dare you?
The Dodgers have him figured out. But then again, who don't
the Dodgers
figured
have
out?
Most people figured out. You cannot judge pitchers in their entirety based on how they do against the Dodgers, because
sure I can.
Folks, if you go into this season thinking that we're not gonna get our asses kicked by the Dodgers for pretty much every single one of those 10 to 12 games that we're going to play against them, you're not going to have a fun season.
Yeah.
I tend to be Mr. Positive of, you know, I don't think the Rockies are going to be as bad as everyone says. I think they're going to be fun to watch this year. You know, when they're not going to be fun to watch is when they're playing the Dodgers. That's just how it be.
Yep.
Like, oh man, that game against the Dodgers where we were facing the top three in their lineup, where it's Shohei, Freddie Freeman, and Mookie Betts, and it's just
Mookie,
like,
then Shohei, then Freddie.
And I was like, yeah, this checks out. But enough about the Dodgers. The one other guy that I think we need to talk about before wrapping things up today is Anthony Molina, the Rule 5 pick from the Tampa Bay Rays this year. And we need to talk about Anthony Molina because as a Rule 5 pick, he is essentially guaranteed a spot on the 26-man roster. So let's take a look and see how he's been doing so far this spring.
Not too shabby.
Honestly, yes. He's already pitched more innings this spring than he ever has in his career. He's got 6 1/3 innings. He's played in 4 games. He hasn't done any starts. He's usually coming in out of the bullpen, which tracks with how the Rockies intend to use him for the start of the year. They basically stated that they want to start him off as a long reliever. And Molina has shown some really interesting stuff where, you know, we've been talking about walks and needing to paint the strike zone. That's Molina. He has just one walk compared to 7 strikeouts so far in his 6 1/3 innings of work. The problem is that he's given up a lot of contact. 9 hits for 7 runs. Granted, only 3 of those 7 runs are earned runs, and he hasn't given up any home runs yet.
No, he has one. Yeah, one home run.
No, no home runs.
But I'm looking at it. One home. Oh, that's a hit by pitch.
Yeah.
The B turned into an R.
I mean, B's and R's are almost the same letter, right?
Especially when I got this tiny little font on my phone. Anyways, continue your point.
I feel like there's not much point to make here. I think it's going to be bumpy for Molina because he's probably going to make his big league debut. Unless the Rockies want to give him back to the Rays, he's got to be on that 26-man roster to start the season. But there's a lot to like about how he's pitched.
Yeah, and he's a young dude. Was he 22, 23? Still unrefined. But they're going to take the chance that, okay, we're going to try to refine him at the big league level. There's a lot to like there. Like we talked about at the top of the show, our number 27 prospect now. And so there's a lot to like, a lot of potential there, a lot of strikeouts. They made the comparison to Ramon Marquez in the past. I think that has some legs. And so we'll see how it develops over the course of the season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting season. I feel like we could probably predict who the opening day 26-man roster is going to be at this point, and that might be something that we do next week. Could be something that we put on Twitter or something like that. But things are really starting to take shape as the Rockies are paring down their camp. They're down to 48 players now in camp. We're seeing much less substitutions as the actual rosters begin to take shape. Whereas, you know, previously your guy gets his 2-3 at bats and he's done. Now we have some guys who are playing whole games. The pitchers are starting to get stretched out. We're about, you know, halfway through spring training here. There's about 2.5 weeks until the regular season starts. And we're going to start seeing some more roster decisions made here. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
That's going to really do it here for us on Infected by Altitude. As always, ran longer than intended. But it's honestly, like, I'm so happy to be in spring training where we actually have things to talk about instead of having to try and...
And write about.
Instead of having to try and BS up a run sheet in the middle of December when there's nothing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great, and we appreciate all of you sticking with us through the long dark of the off season into the glorious sunshine of spring training.
Mm-hmm.
Skylar, anything else you want to add before we get on out of here?
No.
Then how about you tell the folks where they can find you at?
Find me over on Twitter, formerly known as X. See what I did there? At @sideline_crowd. Also go follow the @everyRockyEver. We just did an episode, and go check out that podcast. You can find it here in the podcast feed on your favorite platform under the Rocky Mountain Rooftop banner, where you can search Every Rocky Ever. Our most recent episode about Preston Wilson and Dexter Fowler. That was fun.
I love Preston Wilson and Dexter Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Threads and all of that jazz at Evan_Lang27. You can find me on Blue Sky, I suppose. It's just really, really not taken off, honestly, is at Evan, at evanlang27.bsky.social. Catch me on purplerow.com. I am doing the Monday Rock Piles now, which has been a real interesting transition. It's weird to do my writing on a different day, but it's been a cool transition. And big thing here is you can follow us on Rocky Mountain Rooftop on YouTube, on Twitter, and on Instagram at Rocky Mountain Rooftop. That's at RockyMTN Rooftop. Thank you so much for listening. We are looking forward to talking with you again next week. Skylar, how about you hit him with it and we'll head on out.
Farewell.
Beautiful.
Yay! And say the line, Bart.